This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
And then I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to have as many glasses as Elton John does. And I was like, wait a minute. That's not like a little boy thing to say.
The bitch is back. Oh my gosh. Welcome to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks whose fault is it that you're gay. After quite a long hiatus, we are here for season two. And I just want to explain to you what took so long. On top of a huge cross-country move from New York to Los Angeles, I had what some professionals might call a deep depression. Others might call it a crisis. It's whatever you want to make it, but so many things happened that not even interesting enough to go into, but I really went through a rough period and I couldn't even do the pod. I wasn't putting up any videos, but I took the time to myself, really leaning into therapy and to the pills, and I'm really, really happy to be doing this podcast again. I'm back with you gay-ass girlies. I'm working with a new producer, Jonathan. Say hey, Jonathan.
Hey!
I'm kidding, that was me. I'm in my bedroom. But because of Jonathan, who is a gosh darn star, I can put out a lot more episodes. I'm going to be doing a lot more bonuses for Patreon, patreon.com/gayasspodcast. And I want to be doing a lot of new recaps because I've been guesting on other podcasts, talking a lot about Bravo and other shows. So if you have any shows in mind that you think would be good to recap, please let me know. I'm considering maybe doing a Love Island moment since I just got into that. Celebrity Big Brother, I'm thinking that. Do I go to a classic Bravo? Do I do all of HBO Max? I'm curious to know what you think because I'm going to be getting a lot of those new episodes out. Speaking of recording from this bedroom, y'all, my man, Matthew Lummis, he made this place so cute. We were living on the east side, very close to Silver Lake. Our neighborhood is called Rampart Village. No one here has heard of it, but it's really great. We're close to our friends, and while I miss my friends in New York so much, I've been very happy with this move, and I know it was the right call. For our first episode of season two, we have Bowen Yang, gay icon, SNL cast member, Las Culturistas Girlina. And for complete transparency, we did record this right before I moved and had my crisis. So if you hear any timeline discrepancies, that explains that. But damn, this episode is so good. So I just wanted to get straight into it. Please follow along at Gay Ass Podcast on Instagram and just let the world know you love this episode. Gay Ass Podcast is back. Ah! What an amazing day for That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Bowen Yang, I just have been dreaming, wishing, hoping, and the fact that you are here, I cannot be more gracious, excited, and just so appreciative that you are here. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my gay ass heart.
Oh my God, I'm so grateful from the bottom of my gay ass heart to be here. Should we key in the listener with our scheduling drama?
I think we should.
Everyone. All right. Well, Eric reached out in the loveliest way possible. I was so excited to do it. And then shit got crazy on a Monday. And then I just fully forgot. I was on the train when you emailed me, hey, are we still on? I was 15 minutes late. And then I was like, oh my God, I forgot. I was heading into work because I had to, because they called me in last minute. And then.
Can you illustrate the look on your face when you realized what was happening?
It was like my eyes went up, like my eye line went up. Like it's, you know, when you look at the ceiling, when something is so shocking,
jaw open, eye up,
jaw dropped, eye up. Like, oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Like that's it. Yeah. You're doing it. Anyway,
and then you went,
that was it.
But listen, and then I want to illustrate to the audience that the second Bowen got into the Zoomerie, he started to apologize profusely. I said, Bowen,
because
look me in the
eyes. Because you deserve it.
But like, listen, I do appreciate the apology, and I never want you to feel unappreciated in your apologetic ways, but I want to let you know that your response to me was so gracious and kind that zero part of me was like, well, the rumors are true. Which there aren't rumors.
And the rumors are that Bowen sends really harried emails. I mean, oh, we should say Mercury was in retrograde. And as of today, we're out.
Thank
and
God.
So here we are.
We are here. And I think that's all that matters is that we are here on HBO.
We are here. Oh my God. Season two. Now on HBO Max.
You know, first season had an episode in my home state of Missouri. And the tears I cried when they are just having these gay people, queer people, and their families come to their drag shows. I just think the show really is doing it right.
It's so good. I can't wait for this season. I haven't watched the premiere yet. But wait, are you from that? Was it that Bible Vegas town?
So there was like, exactly. It's Branson. So I'm not from
Branson,
but I'm from St. Okay. And I get dragged all the time on this podcast because it's like, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri, which is like, yes, yeah. The cosmopolitan city of Missouri. Sure.
But it's still informed by the surroundings.
Exactly. Sort of. And so I did not live a Circus Branson life. No, no. But right. When I still see a family of people in Missouri going to cheer on their queer child in the Circus of Branson, I still feel a kindred connection to that city.
Of course.
And those people.
I have no association with Missouri as a state. Overall, and I still got emotional. I was like, this is
exactly incredible. And I have to tell you something, that one of the reasons why I think I still carry some of that with me is because mm-hmm. I've had enough experiences. And listen, let me be the first to say, I love St. Louis. I love Missouri. I love being there and visiting. And
love
truly,
it.
I every time I'm there, I'm like, I guess I should move here. But uh-huh. Matt and I will go to a grocery store. And then, and we, like, two visits ago, we got stared at so hardcore by the old white guy that was checking yeah. us out at the end. And I was like, it's still happening, and I'm not crazy. This is why we tell this story. Yeah. That's why I think I sometimes feel that emotionalité about it, because it still is, there's so many wonderful things about it, but it still yeah. is in the Midwest, and there are still people that have forgotten or never learned that people like us are gorgeous too.
And like, don't you feel sometimes when I watch We're Here, I'm like, thank God I'm seeing these people, like get like the coastal elite queers out of the way, like off the screen, like
yeah.
we've hit our cap, not our cap, but it's like, let me like actually balance this out by like watching people who like live in like these places where it's kind of there is this like weird tenuous danger to their lives,
yes,
day in and day out, and like actually like, you know, I don't know, like them being there, I don't mean to like patronize or fetishize that, it's just like it's really wonderful to see.
I think it's just more real too, because you're yeah. not seeing just the one type of life or coastal elite of it all. You're actually seeing people
exactly.
who are actually going through some shit with their families and people around them. And then to yeah. see Yuriko O'Hara tower in on her 12 feet heels. And then uh-huh. Yuriko O'Hara, I'm sure her bank account is thriving. I'm hoping that her life is thriving. I just think
me
that...
too.
Did you think when we first saw Eureka in Drag Race that you would envision her to be in, what, three TV shows at one time on TV?
I'm sure I didn't exclude it from possibility. I just didn't realize that like she would be this, like I was pretty ambivalent about Eureka when mm-hmm. she was on Drag Race. And then We're Here, it really clicked for me. I was like, oh, she's really good at all of it. And then meanwhile, like Bob and Chancellor, but Bob especially. I mean, Bob is my favorite for all time.
Yes.
She's like my number one. And Bob, like being able to talk to anybody in any town in this country, I'm like, that's a star right there.
That's a star. And also I'm just envisioning like Bob deserves the world. And I could see Bob having a show that is the next Oprah-esque
yep.
crate. Like I think she deserves.
She deserves, she can do it. She deserves, she is prepared.
Funny.
Anyway.
Deep, witty, kind, gorgeous. Yes. Looks. I do want to also congratulate both of us in the Zoomery to talk yes. about Dr. Wendy Osefo's candles have gone
oh
out.
Oh my God. Yes. Let's talk about it. It's I bought just... three of the five. Anyway,
you
sorry.
Did already.
I did.
So
quick
do you,
the trigger.
When you, I mean, speaking of trigger, the wicks of it all, do you feel like Karen versus Wendy? How are we, I mean, I think a single wick, if it carries a lot of punch, who cares how many wicks?
I don't care how many wicks. In fact, when I think three wick candle, I think, oh, you mean like a fucking mosquito one, like for outdoors? Like the, what is it called? The citronella?
Citronella, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like I think citronella when I think three wick.
And
like, I
think
need...
spa bathroom, long, white, I'll never have this in my home.
I'm not going to light three wicks because then I got to snip three wicks. Like I just bought like wick trimmers for the first time. Cause I guess like, I was like, I should probably not set my house on fire and like sure. control the flame. But, three wicks just feels tedious. It's, three wicks is tedium.
Tedium. And I think that candles are more divisive than we initially thought, because I swear to good God, I'm sitting on my couch minding my own. The next thing I know, I smell this very oppressive smell. And I say to myself, I enjoy weed so very much, but I don't, yeah. The flower smell that I'm getting right now, I did not perform that. And I look over and it was Casey Musgrave's candle staring me in the eye. And I didn't, and I love Casey Musgrave.
Like, you don't like slow burn? You don't
I
like
didn't
that candle?
Like
that's
slow
one of my favorite
oh,
candles.
Oh shit, and this is where
damn,
we...
and this is actually, but no, this is proving your point. Candles are divisive.
Candles are literally proving my point. I maybe was hurt by a man or something that was smelling like...
of raspberries or whatever.
of like raspberries and weed. I don't know what it was. It was just like, I looked over and I was like, yeah. And then Matt lit it again like a week later and was like, confirmed, I don't like. And I didn't really? Choose this life. I wish I yeah. liked it, but that specific handle is the no for me.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm really curious as to what... I was reading the descriptions on Wendy's candles and all of them are like named after my son, Wendy's son, King. This one smells like, I mean, and they're fully like, the it does not describe the actual scent. It only describes like the
his third
fantasy.
Grade basketball practice.
Or no, it's like, this one smells like you're on a boat or something. Like it's like shit. Like, I'm like, well, no, but can you give me like the notes of stuff? Like
maybe
it does, there's
where's
no, there's
the boat?
Information. Where's the boat?
How many people are like, on the boat?
How many people on the boat? Is there like a citrus, a floral? Like there's none of that information. It's just purely like the ambient fantasy of like where you would picture yourself being, which
sure.
is not
well
helpful.
We have to follow up and see how the candle smell once you get that.
Yes, happy to.
And the thing is I want Dr. Wendy to have a huge candle factory. I want Karen to be in every Bloomingdale's and have her richness. But do you think the show is forcing a plot storyline that is the candle versus candle?
I loved, if it is produced, if it is forced, I think it feels so like textbook housewives yes. to me that I don't mind it. And also like, I love both of these. I'm not choosing sides, even right. though I've said that I don't like three wick candles. I will probably end up buying the three wick Karen candle. Is it on sale yet?
I don't know. And I, if it is, we should buy both.
We should buy both. I love both of these women so much. And I just love that it feels like such a, like they're warring over their candle lines. Like that is so housewives.
It's so good. And this is actually a conversation I was having the other day with some friends about the housewives. And I'm curious for your answer for this. These plot lines and these storylines are what really feed us. But I think that the more we get into the world, like what we're 15 years in since OC premiered. And yeah. I think that, you know, Brian Moylan, who was actually on this podcast talking about his book about the Real Housewives.
Oh, he's
and,
like the expert. Yeah.
Incredible. So many behind the scenes looks into not only storylines, but of course casting and negotiations with contracts, all of the making of the show. Do you think 10 years from now we're gonna know so much about the housewives and like our fandom will have given us such an inside look that it will lose the magic and it will, or will it still be prevailing because it'll reinvent the wheel of how the show comes together and still is organic bitchery and drama?
Well, I feel like, first of all, I should say that I came in very late to housewives in general. Like I was probably right before the pandemic when I started to like, or no, it was like a couple years before the pandemic when like the only thing I would watch was New York, was Roni. And then broaden my scope, loved Potomac the first season I watched it, which was probably 3 or 4. Mm-hmm. And then since then I've slowly like broadened it. But so I should say that I am by no means an expert. I'm not Brian Moylan level. And I think, I mean, I need to read that Erika Jayne article that they wrote on the New York Times, but like, just that's the perfect example of like, no, like this will all, as long as like TV, as long as reality TV is still relevant, like.
Oh, that's true.
I think like we're always, which I don't foresee it losing its relevance anytime soon. I feel like Housewives will just adapt to the ways that, you know, TV always adapts to everything. And, but like, but these are shows that adapt to their lives and we're fascinated by their lives. Like the Erika Jayne thing is truly so sad and tragic, but also funny, but also not. It's like, there's just so, it's just, it, everything can, all these different ideas converge on these women's lives. And I think like as an audience, we like have to watch.
We have no choice. I mean, I think especially when the law is involved and at that degree, like when the Erika Jayne stuff started, I knew it was going to be big. I didn't know how soon they would have, what was that bad documentary on that was like, was it Lifetime?
The beauty and the beauty and the whatever.
Exactly.
The
like the beautician and the car, like whatever it was. It was like, uh-huh. Yeah, it was pretty, already bad documentary done like really at the beginning, and then and then to see it on TikTok and all of these 16-year-olds doing the Erika Jayne, well, Tom's house is broken into.
Tom's house is broken into, and then I got breathed up different times. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's like it's still very cultural. Because I feel like, I mean, I think everyone can agree that like we're in this new golden age of Housewives.
Yes,
between Erika and Salt Lake, like the Jen Shah, like again, Jen Shah is another example. Like this is someone who is so. I mean, just like, it's just, there's just so much going on.
And the fact that a huge film, like, what is it? Halloween that Kyle Richards is in or what? Mm-hmm. And that I cannot believe that Kyle Richards is sitting at the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills reunion and they are doing cross promotion where they say, oh, and Kyle, you had a scare this morning when you left your house, right? She's like, oh, did I, Andy? I was like, I'm picturing the studio executives like, okay, how can we do some promo and press for this?
They're loving it. And like, it's just, I feel like this is like this crucible that Housewives is walking through right now where it'll come out the other side in a new form. Like New York, but like to bring, speaking of New York, like that is sad. Like it's sad that like it really really was rough. I'd barely watched it this season. I watched the Black Shabbat thing and only because I had heard that Ramona like had hit a new low
really bad. I was speaking with someone about that it was one of the, oh, maybe the boys from Watch What Crappens. It was one of the only times that like I, Eric Williams, was offended watching.
It was just so hard to watch.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Really, and just like the fact, I mean, it can be a little laughable now that Ramona felt that the Jews were targeting her in college and that, you know, well, none of the Jews liked her. It's like.
I had a black nurse too, and who didn't believe me. You know, when I was in pain, it's like, oh my god, the fuck up! Like I would like her to suffer so badly. Like I don't feel that way about anybody except Ramona Singer. It's so crazy.
Do you want her though to suffer publicly on television next season in Roni, or do you want her to be fired?
I don't want to watch her. I really don't want to watch her on TV. And she's the only housewife that I feel that way about. I'm like, I don't want to see you.
I know. And then the fact that they brought her back for the All-Stars and there's going to be Ramona fighting with Kenya and all. It's like, I think maybe she'll suffer in that, Bowen. I really think that we might get that.
She might. And that might actually be a fun come up in spec anyway.
Well, truly. I mean, there's no end to Real Housewives to be discussed. And I'm just grateful that you took that journey with me. But I do want to go on another journey and ask you a really important question. When you were kind of envisioning the characterization of the proud gay Oompa Loompa, top or bottom, yes. What do you think?
I think he is just a really soft, gentle top.
Oh my God, that's so beautiful.
A really considerate top. And, but gosh, I mean, proud gay Oompa Loompa, I normally am like, This is the normal cycle of like what I do when
please
I put something on SNL. Like I'll like watch it a bunch of times on Sunday to be like, what was I doing? And then I'll just like, over time, I'll like forget about it. And mm-hmm. I'll just like close the chapter on it in my head. This one was, I mean, it was so fun to write. And Anna Drezin and Allison Gates helped me write it. And it was so, so, so fun. It was a little bit of like a weird rush order because we wrote it. We kind of landed on the idea on Friday because they asked us to like write something on Thursday night. And we were like, okay, but I've got a busy week with this other stuff, but okay, we'll figure it out. And I just felt a little anxious the whole week leading up to it, just being like, I don't know what this is going to be.
What was the direction of like what they want? A broader idea, or they were like gay Oompa Loompa?
No. It was the week before Oompa Loompa, I did this other update that didn't make it to air that I was really kind of bent out of shape about. Mm. And so then they were like, well, we want Bowen on update again this week. And I was like, okay, can I do my thing that I did last week? They go, no. And I was like, okay. And then we just kind of, when Anna and I were just kind of tossing ideas back and forth. And I, as a full joke, was like, well, here to comment on Timothée Chalamet as Willy Wonka is a gay Oompa Loompa. Like, I just like threw that out there as like a just truly a throwaway.
Oh my God, I'm so angry. And then of course, that good.
Well, no. And then Anna gets back to me. She was like, well, the producers love it, so we're doing it. And I was like, oh God. Like, anyway. And so I don't know, to be honest, like I felt like there was a glut of like really like outwardly femi gay stuff that I was doing this week. And I don't think it's from a place of internalized homophobia. I think I'm just like, as just a performer, I'm like, I can do more than that.
Right? Yeah.
But it's fine. Like this is my own weird, stupid, fucked up journey.
No, I'm sure it's really layered. I'm sure there's a proudness of showing certain colors of you, but also like, of course, that desire to stretch and also to let the audience know that there is more than what certain people in the world might just expect of a certain type of person. I get that.
I think I've set some mental model for like a person in let's say Missouri. Mm-hmm. Not even, it doesn't even matter. It's just like, I've said, like a person in New York, even like who thinks, oh, he's that guy who does the gay stuff on SNL. And I'm like, I'm happy to be that. I also kind of want to like, to just let people know that like, there's other stuff.
Yeah. But see, then like, what I want, like in this like moment of hangage with Bo and Yang, what I want you to feel now is like, the normalization and validation of like how you carry that and handle that, even from this conversation, I can tell like that is such a weight that I'm sure any person must feel. And like the way that you, I think, are able to look at the types of characters and types of work and try to put your best foot forward, but also know that there is like people in any state in the country that are going to have all these opinions. Like that is like a heavy burden that anyone would feel. And from my perspective, it seems like you really do such a great job of living with that weight and then just continuing to do amazing work.
Oh, that's very nice, Eric. I don't, that's very nice.
It's just, I think like the thesis statement is just like, fuck, that must be so hard. And also like, you're killing it. Like that, I can't, you know, that is a lot to, I mean, even with a platform of a much smaller world, like even with like this podcast or anything, or like I've talked about how I've had a video on TikTok go big in a bad way, you know, of like, you know, getting people angry or whatever it is. And I think that, not to bring this into another one of my favorites of your performances from last night, just because it's also kind of fun and femmy, but like the bug assembly, I think like has to even, like, I know that it spoke to so many people, including queer people. I watched that bug assembly so many times since that aired. And like, that's what I also wanted to ask you, especially since we're in this part of the SNL kind of behind the scenes. I want I want the Inside the Actor's Studio. So like the bug assembly, like from pitch to stage, like, can you tell me how that came about?
So it was, a text that I got on Tuesday from Allison Gates, she's one of the supervising writers at SNL, has written so many, like, also should get all the credit in the world for like really queering the place up. Mm. Like a lot of great, like specifically, it's not limited to, but like a lot of specifically like lesbian content, mm-hmm. like in terms of the writing, and like has a lot to do with her. in the recent years of the show, and she and I got hired the same year to write, and she's just like truly one of the funniest people who I know. But texted me on Tuesday, hey, I have this the most legally stupid idea in the world, but I was staying in an Airbnb this summer with my mom, and the shower was full of daddy long legs, and I just spent the whole day not being over the fact that their name is Daddy Longlegs. So maybe it's, you know, a school assembly where kids are presenting. And then she literally just like had the full pitch like realized. And then you come out and like, and then she said, you come out in like Vogue or whatever, like that's it. She was like, if you hate it, it's fine. I can take it to like another host some other week, but this is just an idea. And I was like, what are you talking about? That is so funny. And then interestingly, so it was me, Allison, and this other writer, Celestium, who works at the show too. Mm-hmm. And the three of us were just sitting in their office, and we were trying to write, like we were trying to pitch jokes about like a bad art friend sketch, like a sketch based on that New York Times article, God. Bad Art Friend, where it was just like, you know, Rami Malek like reads from his book and then at like The Strand or something. And then like I'm in the audience being like, hey, did you write that thing about me? Like, you know, whatever, stupid, like inspired by Bad Art Friend.
Sure.
And then like, we kind of hit a wall very early on. We were like, oh, like there's just a lot of like moving parts to this, and it's not as simple and straightforward as we think. But then Allison was like, I was like, we have that Daddy Long Legs thing. And I was like, oh, right. And then the three of us, it was just like this wellspring of like all these different jokes. And all three of us just kind of like rattled off these different like jokes that made it into the end. And then we wrote it. And then there was just this long discussion about the costume, about like how many legs it would have, how wide, and like all these things. And
who came up with the almost death drop that you're too afraid to do?
That was me. I'd like just being like, you were about to do a death. Yeah, that was just like in the room. But it's like, it was just, that's like the perfect. I mean, those moments are so, to me, they're very rare where it's like, it's just effortless and easy, yeah. And it just comes out of you.
I think the people watching it could tell, because every joke that came out of your mouth was just like, it was like, I looked around the room I was sitting and just like, is everyone seeing this? And it's just me by myself. It's just like, it's so, and the fact that you reference the judges that don't exist and the Bravo exec dad and the Republican dad. And I think when you also yell about, if there are mommy long legs and don't, I how,
oh, I I'm, freak out.
I'm about to freak out, like get her out of here. I just, uh-huh. Yeah, I wanna.
It was pretty stupid. It was so really dumb. But this is, I love it. But like Conan O'Brien, like finished his CBS show and he was like, all my career, I've wanted to like be at the intersection of stupid and smart. I'm not saying Daddy Long Legs is smart, but it's very stupid. And then he said, so Conan said that, and I like burst into tears because I idolize him. And I think that's like the perfect, like, that's the perfect little, you know, liminal or just like Venn diagram.
Yeah. Like, well, I think it's also, you know, what it shows me that I've really been trying to learn, especially in the past 2 years, is like, stupid ideas, like you're rattling off, like the fact that you even said like, yeah, gay Oompa Loompa, that sees a tilum. It's like, I think that writing things down or allowing like a dumb idea and to not judge it, because so many other people would have looked at any idea like that and been like, yeah, but like who would actually want to see that, whatever it is. And like, how many other gay Oompa Loompas has this world missed out on?
You're so right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, I don't have that much of an awareness around when I self-edit. And the first form of self-editing so often is someone going, you telling yourself, oh, that idea would be bad. To shut it down at that level is like tough.
I swear to God, this podcast was very close to being like, why would I even do that? And like, then like, it's sad to think about creative people out there that are not allowing themselves to do something out of self-editing. I mean, also, and I'm so glad you brought up the Bad Art Friend thing too, because I haven't spoken about it really with anyone. And it's just like, I would be curious to see what an SNL sketch of Bad Art Friend would be, because I read it before so the long story short of what my life is like right now, partly why I'm having like such, if I were to say the word agita right now, would you be like, yeah, that's the right word?
No, that is the exact right word.
Okay. I thought you were like, no, it's not.
I love agita.
I'm having such...
The usage of it.
The usage. Such agita in this moment, because I'm surrounded by boxes. I'm moving from New York City to LA in about 42 seconds, like in a week
oh
and a half.
Oh my God.
So I was there a week ago looking apartment hunting, and it was a nightmare. But what distracted me from the nightmare was I saw randomly on Twitter that Bad Art Friend had just been posted. And so I was reading it the first full day I was there. And like, it was before it was like in the zeitgeist of people in conversation. And so I was like, is yeah. And again, like looking around by myself, is anyone reading this? And then now that it's like, I've had the week to digest it, like to see, because I'm sure that's kind of the magic of SNL, I think, is like, you know, Squid Game is going to have a sketch and what is it going to be?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know that Bad Art Friend could, but like, do you think there's still, is it too far gone now that next week there would be a Bad Art Friend sketch?
Not too far gone. I feel like it's just so funny to me that article even took off the way it did.
But because
I think it kind of dominated Twitter discourse in a way, because writer Twitter was actually like getting in, like Celeste Ng was like popping off.
Yeah.
You know, and so like that got that and then it became like a true Wendy Williams. What was that? And like everyone sort of training their attention on like what's going on over here. I think that's what happened.
Yeah.
I'm probably butchering like the sequence of it. But
well, I think a lot happened. There's no way to get it right, because then like there's people arguing about they're both wrong. One's wrong. Who's wrong?
I feel like one's more wrong than the other. But I think the takeaway, I think who said this? Like, I think there was like this writer on the new Gawker on Gawker said, mm-hmm. like the takeaway is that all writers are annoying, including me, you know, like, every writer is so obnoxious and so insufferable.
And I do agree.
The fact that, yeah.
No, you go.
I was just going to say, me and Celeste have talked about it, and like Celeste and I have talked about it, and the fact that they can subpoena your texts is, we're all going to jail.
Could not believe that the group texting about how fucking annoying this one person is. Like, I mean, if my texts were subpoenaed, I actually like, especially like, you know, like the whole jokes about like the government, your computer, and like you're doing a show for the government official. I'm like, every time I text something now, I do think about like what the government official would think of it. And I try to be a little more careful. But like before that awareness, I'm sure the subpoena would not look good for me, babe.
Yeah. We all have this like collective awareness that like there's a surveillance around like all of our interactions.
And we all
online.
Have an annoying friend.
And we all have an annoying friend or multiple annoying, you know, coworkers, let's say. And so then, not that I have any annoying coworkers at SNL, but
like, no, just like anyone they've even just like been in the world with. Like,
exactly.
There's going to be annoying ones, and you're going to want to tell someone else that they were annoying.
Exactly.
So subpoena that government.
Yeah. That chills me to the bone.
Chilling. You know what also chills me as I thought of today is I was scrolling my phone, minding my own, and I see that a person posted wedding photos of like, bridal party, they were all heavily filtered on like an Instagram heavy filter, and I thought to myself, now we're going to jail, because you are now like doing like a glossed over orange tinted Instagram photo on like your actual wedding
like 2013 day. Like 2013
exactly
style.
It's like how far we have gone from the path.
Yeah, I mean, I always say to those people, like, just read the news, read a book, like just catch up with the time we're
catch up.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Babe, well, speaking of kind of straying from the path, I do want to get us back on course to ask a very famous podcast question, Bowen, which is we sit around the fire here and we say to ourselves, what made you gay? Whose fault? Who do we blame even? Mm-hmm. Bowen, what do you say?
I thought long and hard about this question. And for a second, it was hard for me to answer. But then it became so obvious as soon as I had considered it. But it's growing up in Montreal for a portion of my childhood, Celine Dion really just kind of like did it all. But it was easy to sort of take cover behind her growing up because everyone loved her where I lived. The Quebec of it all. She was a deity, and like you'd go on field trips at school and you could go to the cathedral. I mean, there's the big cathedral downtown, like is this landmark in Montreal, but like the thing they would tell the kids, like 5-6 year olds, they would tell us is, you know, this is where Celine Dion got married. Like that was like the whole appeal to it for us. And, you know, growing up with her albums, like Let's Talk About Love was right around when Titanic came out. Mm. And so it was a combination of Titanic coming out and My Heart Will Go On being this like fucking mega hit. And then us like begging, me and my sister begging my mom to buy Let's Talk About Love when we went to Costco or something. And then just like listening to it.
Do you remember any tracks from that really stand out to you?
Immortality, Tell Him. I think her duet with Barbara is on that.
Oh, yes.
I think My Heart Will Go On was probably buried in there as a way to like really sell it. So she does a song with the Bee Gees on it. It's interesting because I have not revisited it in like decades, mm-hmm. but it was this like, it broke open every dam in my mind in terms of like, okay, here we go now. And then it was me like reading the liner notes, reading the lyrics, like singing along to the lyrics.
I forgot about a good liner note. Oh, when you would just pour through that little booklet.
I know. It was like there's no like tactile experience anymore unless you're like really obsessed with finals. But
wait, what was actually in those liner notes that was so engrossing?
Just the lyrics. It was just the lyrics.
Just the lyrics, right? And then at the end it would be like a little special thanks or something. Like
At the end she would like write like thank yous, and it was like I'm reading what Celine Dion wrote down, you know, mm-hmm. like that was like so holy and sacred to me. I was like, oh my God. And then like she, you know, like there would be like concert specials that would air on TV all the time in Canada. And I would watch that. She probably did like some duet with Elton John. And then they went backstage with him and he like showed off his glasses collection. And I was like, when I grow up, I'm going to have as many glasses as Elton John does. And I was like, wait a minute. That's not like a little boy thing to say. And then like would perform like striptease numbers to Celine Dion songs, like in front of my family. They'd be like, no, Bowen, what are you doing? And like, and it was just so like she like really like gave me all the contours of loving Celine Dion, like we're all like pulling into focus the fact that I was like gonna be a gay boy.
That really speaks to me. I think it brings so much up, not only about like the diva worship of it all, but also just Celine. I think that you probably felt such a connection to her because not only of just what makes her Celine, but somehow deep inside, we must have known how weird she was. And then when those videos started coming out years, what I would say, like how many years ago, 10 years ago, and it was like Saturday. Uh-huh. Like she's singing the days of the week. She's doing her warm-ups. She's throwing water on her face. I think that I would dare to say we do deserve Celine Dion because we've been through enough, but like we maybe almost don't because I think that she has also been through a lot. And I think there must be something there about strong female performers with incredible talent that have also been through a very harrowing time. I mean, dare I go dramaturgically to Judy Garland? Dare I go to why Anna Nicole Smith was so beloved by so many queens? Dare I go to
what? Who?
Brittany Murphy.
Yo, yeah, of course. I need to watch that documentary.
Me too. My friend Lindy was like begging me to watch it ASAP. Yeah. But that was yesterday. I'm gonna watch it this week. I will watch it. I hear it's incredible.
Me too. I hear it's great.
But yeah, there's just like, I think Celine, like, gosh, she's been through a lot.
She's been through a lot. I think childhood is very hard. And then, you know, the marriage is like a little questionable. And then like obviously like her like mourning like that loss in her life is also like it kind of informs
right because
like,
that was always Celine. An interesting sort of shadow, dare I say, of because how much older was he?
Celine was born in 68. Renee was born in 42. So 26 year difference. Like that's a lot. That is not negligible. That is like,
and she was very young when they.
She was like, I think 15.
Oh.
So that's what makes it a little troubling. But let's see, when did they meet? Let's see. Angelina and Dion were huge. Okay, sorry. They married in 1994. Okay, they dated in 88. Oh, okay, never mind. When she was 20, but I feel like. That's okay. Never mind. I take it back. But like, so he got a tape of her when she was 12 and then was managing her. And then, eight years later, they like were public in their relationship. So I'm like, I can't, whatever. This is not for me to say. Anyway, Celine's been through a lot. And like, I'm sure that was like, just that loss is like, of course, like, so.
Yeah,
so
I mean, it's all, no matter what we say or feel or think about what happened, it's a lot no matter what it was.
Yeah.
What it was a lot.
Was a lot.
Also, you know what's so devastating about me is that when I'm thinking about all these women and like trying to come up with examples of like Brittany Murphy, all these things, my other thought was like, Garcelle in Beverly Hills.
Garcelle.
Like, she has had a really tough life too, but like, God, has she had such an amazing career life moment now. And I think that it's the only time I've wanted Lisa Rinna fired. I just want to throw that in.
I mean, the fact that I was siding against Rinna is like, what's going on?
Yeah, that's troubling. Speaking of a young Celine, that's troubling. So I do want to, because a lot of people have asked me in anticipation of That's the Gayest Podcast with Bo and Yang, when you had, when Kim Kardashian was on, first of all, Kim, great, I think killed it. I think such a great job. I do think that my question for you is, were you surprised that one of the biggest takeaways online was that she didn't write her monologue? It's like, hello, no one does.
Well, I'm not surprised that people generally don't understand like the ins and outs of the writing at the show. Like, it's not terribly, I think it's gotten more transparent in recent years where people are like, oh, there are writers on the sketches and there are writers on the monologue. And I just think that there was a different audience that was trained on to this moment in Kim's career where they're like, they just assume that, I don't know, they just come in with assumptions about Kim, and then in order to like to validate those assumptions, they like will really try to find a roundabout way to be like, see, she's not good at what she's doing. Like, she didn't write that monologue. It's like, yeah, well, almost none of the hosts do, unless they're like a stand-up comic, you know?
Right.
So,
and the fact that she sold it so well, I thought was like, and that's what I was so impressed by her is like, and of course the cut for time sketch of the Costco of it all, of like,
oh right.
I mean, Kim, I thought, and I really am not like trying to patronize her or
no.
You know, I think that she just like it. I don't know anything about what it would be like to host SNL, mm-hmm. but what I do know is that to do something out of your comfort zone like that on such a
so
big
scary.
Platform, it's scary, and there are so many skills that you like with. I mean, I can't even begin to imagine the teleprompter of it all, and then the audience and the cameras and the marks and whatever it is. And I think that Kim like really sold it all and just like really did great.
She was just very like steady all week, like, and like our stage managers were like just told her, you know, like people usually aren't this calm.
Yeah.
Like, she was very calm, but like not calm in like I'm gonna say like a vacant way. Like, she was just very present the whole time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like,
you could tell she didn't feel above any of it. I just felt like she was so putting herself into the process, and that was like made me really team Kim.
Yeah, she and she like, you know, like had like her friends there who I think help her out with Skims, but they're also like but then like they're these two like cool women, Asian women who run like a climate change org, like, which I think says a lot about like who she surrounds herself with. Like, I think it says a lot about like her, and like she really is like going all in on this like this law thing mm-hmm. in terms of like getting people out of prison. Like, she's taking her bar in like a week, you know, like she's taking the bar in like a week. And I just think she's you know, she's very impressive. And she's able to do all these things with her resources in a way that, like, is not, like, it's, like, I think, like, most, like, I would say, I have this conception that, like, a lot of wealthy people just, like, literally don't know what to do with their money.
Right.
You know? And then, like, unfortunately, I stan a billionaire, technically, because she's in the billionaire zone. But, like, she, you know, like, is doing,
I think we're allowed to. I think, like, Kim getting people who have been wrongly incarcerated, like, I think it's pretty, I feel the most okay about, like, how are there any other billionaires I would feel this okay about standing?
Well, this is the thing, like, any other billionaire who wants to go to space will say like it's for the advancement of humankind, when it's really about like, and it's just an ego thing,
and they like to play with toy cars and toy shuttles and then actually have their space dreams come true. To like, I really think that is,
like, that's, to me, that's like a stupid arbitrary difference between like that kind of like indulgence, and I don't think it's an indulgence of her to like try to like get wrongly incarcerated people
and take the bar exam and like actually do good with that. It's like, I don't think that Kim is like the most like blameless, like perfect angel. I think that she really, like, the SNL thing, I just think it really swayed me recently. I'm just like, If you show respect to the people that I love,
there you
then
go.
I love, I mean, you like, more.
She, like, I think she, like, everyone is pretty taken with her. And, like, I wasn't, like, too surprised at that. I knew she would be, like, a very charismatic person. Like, she's who she is for a reason. But
I do have to ask, unfortunately, I'm contractually obligated to ask if Courtney and Travis visited.
It was interesting. Courtney and Travis were there this past week with Young Thug, because Travis was playing drums for Young Thug.
Right.
And so Courtney was not there for Kim's week, but Chloe and Chris were, and I think Scott, they flew out Scott. I don't know that much. I don't watch I never watched Kardashians, unfortunately.
I'm married to someone who does, and mm-hmm. sort of peripherally will hear about, and you know, I think that they are engaged and that they are doing that.
Mm. Well, who's they? Courtney and Travis?
They are, as of very recently, engaged.
Yesterday, I think. Yeah.
Yet I think what we all should be asking ourselves is, how is Amelia Hamlin doing? I think.
Oh my God. Right. Wait, how does Amelia fit into all this?
So Scott Disick dated Lisa Rinna and Haley Hamlin's daughter Amelia, yeah. And they broke up. And so I was like, Ada being the seeing of like, okay, so I wonder how Scott's feeling now that Courtney's engaged to another man. And then I wonder how Amelia is reading the news. Feeling. And then I wonder if Lisa's mad that she's no longer in.
Like just
in the press. Kind of
by proxy associated with the Kardashians, yeah. Necessarily.
I do want to say that in terms of all the celebrity talk, when you went to the Emmys, who smelled the best?
Who smelled the best? I didn't really go up to anybody, but I mean, Jean Smart hugged me, and then that was really heavenly. I think she did smell very good. She wore really nice. She just wore a really tasteful, chic dress. Her hair was so perfect. I mean, she just looked so beautiful. And I got to meet her. I got to meet her son, who she talked to me about when we did Actors on Actors, in the summer. And I was just like, I can't believe I get to say hello to you. And this is crazy.
Did you pick out the clear heels? When did that come into the picture?
That was so Ian Bradley, wonderful stylist. We were just going through different options, and then we landed on traditional tux, even though we had all these flights of fancy about doing something very different. Mm-hmm. But then I put the tux on, and I was like, it's got to have some element of intrigue or interest. And then this heels label Ciro, who are friends, and are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant designers make these heels. And it was and they came out this metallic one that was sold out, but then Ian was able to get those. And then I was like, let's go with the metallic ones. It was between the metallic ones or just black leather. And then I think I wish they were clear. Oh my God. And you couldn't see, I wish they were clear in that there was nothing in them. You couldn't see my feet. I wish my feet were also transparent.
Somehow. Oh, but, that would have been cool.
But then that was it.
It's so, I just, the fact that it was so cool to watch, and I think that next year is going to be incredible to see Jennifer Coolidge getting her due.
Oh my God.
And the fact that
when she presented, it was everybody was oh my God, there's Jennifer. Everybody shut the hell up and listen to what this woman has to say.
And that is the correct reaction. And I think the other correct reaction is to put her in season 2 of White Lotus. Thank fucking God.
I know, when they said oh, no returning characters from season 1, I'm like, well, you gotta have at least J. Cool
or I'm out, or I'm not or watching. Best.
I would take Connie, but then that would mean the rest of the family. I hope Natasha Rothwell comes back.
She better. I mean, we need to have some sort of closure. She deserves the world, and if we don't get her in season 2, I think they should. They'll do the right thing.
Oh, did they ever close the loop on... Because I remember Jennifer Coolidge's character gives Natasha, spoiler alert for White Lotus, gives her a bunch of cash. And then I think Natasha just cries and then puts the cash in a drawer.
Right.
But I hope she made off with that.
I do too. I just, because I think when you're watching the show, you have in your gut that it's not going to go well for her.
Right.
But
right.
I don't think that needs to be the be all end all for Natasha Rothwell's character. I think that we can have her in season 2, and I think that we deserve that. Speaking of these women, I do want to ask you, if the world was ending, you can only save one character actress, who would you save?
That's so hard. I would probably, I'm going to, there's my, I think I've narrowed it down to let's see. I have this weird obsession with Missy Pyle but I feel like she hasn't, I don't know. I feel like that's not someone that people root for.
But I think we love to hate, but then by loving to hate.
But I just love Missy Pyle so much. And then let me just see, these other names. I mean, it's Missy Pyle for me. She really when she was in Josie and the Pussycats, I was like, who the fuck is, that character actress thing where you're like, who is this person who's coming in for two scenes and is stealing the whole thing for me? And that's for me, what a character actress should do in that relegated role. It's not
absolutely
that all character actors are relegated to that, but that is you doing the job well.
Doing the job well. And I'm pulling up her IMDb right now because she has been in so many things that you're just like, oh my God. And then She does.
In Ma, like, she gets fucking run over by Octavia, and like,
okay, just... I haven't watched, but I'm so glad that you said that, because now I have to watch, because I've seen all the memes and I just know I have to watch it.
I know, like, if you've seen the memes, you've seen it all. And like, I think it's just like, I hope they make a sequel, and I think Octavia like wants it to happen.
Oh right. I
just love that Octavia loves it.
I do too. I do. And wait, didn't Octavia just comment like and create a drama on someone's Instagram? Was it with Britney Spears?
Oh no, I don't know about this.
I think she like commented, oh, make sure you get a prenup, girl, like when she got engaged. And then it created a shitstorm and she had to come out with a statement. Ugh, poor Octavia.
Poor Octavia.
But also Missy Pyle is in Gone Girl. I forgot she had a moment in that.
Oh, that's right.
I could have sworn, okay, please do not cancel me if I'm wrong, but don't you remember that movie that was like an Oscar nominee that was a black and white film that was like a silent film that was made like
The Artist?
Wasn't she in The Artist?
I think that was like an all French cast.
Fuck.
Wait, hold on. Maybe that's someone else.
It might be someone else.
But she was in she was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I think she was Mike TV's mom, or she was like one of the kids.
Oh, that's right. She was in The Artist. She was in The Artist.
Oh, look, then I apologize.
It says
I'm
Constance.
So
she played the character of Constance. She had some random part, and I was like, is that Missy? Like, I just remember watching that, and like, that's the character actress moment where you're like, you're doing your damn fucking job. You're doing your damn job.
Yep.
What a great answer. No, Bo, and that is a very good answer, and you should feel proud.
Okay, thank you.
Before we actually close out, I did want to make sure to ask you, because one of the things I'm looking forward to the most is I would say film of the century is Fire Island. Can you just like, I'm like so fucking pumped for this. I'm not, like, I really mean that. I just think that this movie is so exciting. Can you give us any either dirt, tease, moment from set, from anything behind BTS?
The BTS was just that it was like surreal the whole time. Was that it was like, oh my God, like this is like, for me, it like checked every box in terms of a movie that I want to just watch.
Exactly, like, that's what I'm feeling. I cannot wait to watch this movie.
Like a Jane Austen inspired rom com set in the present day, like set on fire. I mean, up and down the call sheet, everyone was queer. Like first AD, like every person was like just so wonderful.
Do you know when?
I don't. I really don't. But I hope sometime next summer.
Mm-hmm.
But I had never gotten the chance to like actually do something that was like emotionally anchored by the writing, and really like did the actorly thing of like writing down like my character's like backstory. Yeah. And like really like kind of like going through things scene by scene and being like, what am I like, what's going on here? Like I hadn't done that before ever. And as someone who like didn't like train that way, whose only training was like screaming, being a fucking idiot in a sketch comedy. Like I don't like, this was like a fully different modality to work in. And this is just me talking about myself. Like that was just so perfect and gratifying to do. And then like, just doing it with like Joel was like surreal, because it was like kind of a lot of it, like it's based on Pride and Prejudice, of course, but like a lot of like the dynamics between like mm-hmm. Jane and Liz, like the reason why Andrew On signed on to the movie was because he was like, I just love that this is Pride and Prejudice, but it's about the sisters.
Yeah.
You're more focused about the sisters than you are about like the romance in some ways. And so Joel wrote like our character's relationship sort of based on like him and I going to Fire Island like very early on, like 6 years ago, when like, you know, we were just kind of like awkwardly trundling through being like, I don't think where do we fit into this, you know? And so that I think is a really interesting exploration, and it's like it's a very honest look at like how Fire Island is. And so I just couldn't believe we worked there. I couldn't believe like everyone was so welcoming of us. I mean, there were people, of course, who complained, but overall, like I ran into every single person who like was staying on the island, who like was spending their whole summer there, they were just like, oh my gosh, it's so fun that you guys are here. I was like, are you sure? Because I just, my worst fear is that it disrupts like life for you guys. And like, for the most part, people were like, just like kind of thrilled. And I think, I hope that that like, I hope that like they enjoy it. I hope that like for queers, we enjoy it, because like, it's this thing where, again, up and down the call sheet, it's queer people. Like, and so I hope it comes off as something authentic when it gets released and people see it.
I think that's why I'm so excited for it.
Yeah. And I think this is not a read. I think this is just like where we're at right now is like this community, for lack of a better word. It's like, which we are, I don't know why I'm saying that, but I think we're hard on each other about if something is like fulfilling what we like sort of blue sky in our own thoughts, you know, like,
yeah,
I think there are really valid expectations that are placed on queer work, but sometimes I feel like it's somewhat tempting to like bring some little ounce of bad faith into things for again valid reasons that have to do with like scarcity or defining what like the community wants and all these things. And I just think that I really hope that this sort of gets to like transcend that.
I totally understand what you're saying, and I think that we talk about a lot on this podcast about sort of queer people watching something, and I think if it doesn't speak to either their exact experience or maybe coming from that place of scarcity or whatever it is, that desire to knock it or exaggerate what they might not like about it, I think is something that might have been one of the voices in my head that maybe wants to censor an idea sometimes, is because of that fear.
Maybe.
And I think that reading this idea, and also I think just like, because speaking for myself, I have so much faith in Joel, in you, in Matt, and all the people I know that are involved with it. I think that I feel so excited and ready to fangirl the shit out of it, and just like,
and you can not fangirl it when you watch it and you're like, oh, I hate this.
Watch
like,
me go harder than I did on Dear Evan Hansen. Can you imagine?
I mean, like everyone is allowed to like,
yeah,
react the way they should react. I just feel like you know, it's, I think we're all figuring it out together, like on either side of it, we're, yes, all sort of learning what we should be doing.
Totally.
And I think a nice non-judgmental space for everybody is like right on the money. I think I would love to not judge the audience for their reaction to it, and because that's like my greatest fear, is to like have some sort of contempt for like the people who are like consuming something. Like, that is like the worst possible relationship you could have in terms of like putting your art out there. And so I really want to like not get to that place ever.
Definitely.
because there are people who do, and I think things suffer because of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm breathing in on that non-judgmental space and breathing out the fucking love of it all. I just could not be a bigger fan. And before we say goodbye, I do want to really ask the most divisive question, which is, Boney,
yes,
what is the best Whoopi Goldberg film?
Oh my God. I'm going to say something so controversial. And it is Rat Race.
You know, I've seen some people be tempted by R Squared, and yet you went straight down the line.
Straight down the line. It's the original Squid Game. and yeah, it's pretty good.
Well, a perfect answer has never more perfect answer has never been said. Boney Yang, thank you for coming on That's a Gay Ass podcast. I'm so grateful, and I cannot wait to see more magic on screen, on stage, in person, and beyond.
Thanks, Aaron.
Oh, what a dream.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.